Good morning. We'll call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today's Today is a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Today is April 12th, 2021. The time is 9:03. Please silence all cell phones. Members present, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilson, Senator Wilikowski will be along momentarily. Today's agenda, HB 76, extending COVID-19 disaster emergency. This is the third hearing of HB 76. Today is my intention to hear an introduction of the Senate Finance Committee substitute and set the bill aside. We have a CS for introduction. If I could have someone move the CS. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt Senate CS for CS for House Bill number 76 Finance Work Draft 32-GH1011/E as our working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Schein, would you please come put yourself on the record and walk us through the CS?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Schein. I'm staff to Co-Chair Bishop and the Senate Finance Committee. I will walk through all the changes that are in the draft from version W.A to E. First, as an overview, I'd like to note that this extends the January 15th disaster declaration to December 31st of 2021. There are no mandates besides the requirement to submit a monthly report on the financing plan. This provides the governor and the administration tools to use in their response to COVID-19. It allows for vaccine distribution, expedited procurement, reinstates telehealth flexibilities, and they're able to receive the emergency allotment for SNAP benefits and FEMA funds for congregate shelters. Mr. Chairman, there are title changes in the bill on page one that are reflected in the sections later on in the bill. So going to section one of the bill, on page two, line three, this is the finding section. The only change in this section is the expiration date of December 31st, 2021. That can be found on page three, line 24. The next section, section two, and actually, Mr. Chairman, if I can, I'd like to be able to present sections two, three, and four together. It kind of completes the picture of what the CS is trying to accomplish, and then I can pause after section four to take any questions from members if they have some.
That's fine.
Okay, section two, page three, line 25, starts the section on extending the disaster emergency as well as the approval and ratification of the previous disaster declarations on November and December. The extension of December 31st, 2021 lines up with the indication from the Biden administration that their intention is to extend the federal disaster, and therefore Alaska would be eligible for the emergency allotment of SNAP benefits until the end of the year. This also kind of highlights in subsection C, if you go to page four, line six, this section, subsection C, is a way for the administration, actually the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, to certify to the governor that there is no longer a present outbreak or a credible threat of an imminent outbreak of COVID-19 in Alaska. This is one way that the public health or the disaster declaration could end prior to December 31st. There's also the option that the legislature under AS 2623025 subsection C, also the power in the Alaska Disaster Act gives the legislature to end it early. There's also a statute in the Alaska Disaster Act, AS 2623020C, which grants the governor a power to end the disaster declaration by proclamation. Subsection C is a little bit more of a guidelines. This would be something for legal to probably work out between what the governor's powers are under 2623.020C and this subsection C and this as proposed in the legislation, but I would just like to highlight that for members. The next section, section 3, which is on page 4, line 17. This is a new section from the previous version of the bill. This is in response, ultimately it restricts the governor's access to 2623.020G. That's the powers of the governor for the Alaska Disaster Act. This limits them, the governor, from access for subsection 4 through 6, 8, and 11 in conversations with the department, as well as just understanding that disaster statutes, these are not needed or were not utilized in response to COVID-19. And so this is in response to the kind of the hearings that we've heard throughout this process, that the governor potentially and the administration have too much power. So this is limiting his access to 2623.020G. And finally, Mr. Chairman, on section 4, this is a new section and in a new concept that's being proposed. This provides emergency powers to the commissioner of the health of the Department of Health and Social Services. He can declare a public health emergency if the department needs to take action to protect the public health, including providing public health services or enforcing existing health laws as part of the state's response to COVID-19. The public health emergency order must support the department's effort to maximize and maintain the following benefits: the emergency allotment SNAP benefits, CMS blanket waivers, and CMS is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the 1135 waivers, and the 1915C waivers, which is the home and community-based waivers through the department. At this point, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give a little background on how we got to this language and the concept of this section. As we are all aware, Alaska is potentially going to lose the $8 million of emergency allotment SNAP benefits. The Family First Coronavirus Response Act, or FCRA, section 2302(1)(a)(1), requires a state to be able to be eligible for emergency allotment SNAP benefits that there be a federal public health emergency under section 319 of the Public Health Services Act, and a state must have an emergency or disaster declaration by a state. Ultimately, our statutes are limited. We do not have public health powers to issue a disaster declaration or a public health emergency declaration. This section is aiming to provide that sort of power to the Commissioner of Health and Social Services. This section was actually provided for the committee's consideration from the Department of Health and Social Services. This information, or this section, I believe mirrors what Michigan is doing. As we know, Michigan does not have a disaster declaration issued. However, they are still receiving their emergency allotment SNAP benefits through a emergency declaration for public health. You know, in my conversations with the Food and Nutrition Services on any other sort of workaround language, they were very clear that FCRA is very, very clear on how a state would be able to receive the emergency allotment SNAP benefits. I believe, Mr. Chairman, that this section would be, we would be able to receive the emergency allotment SNAP benefits if the department were to issue a public health emergency order. And that, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions over those two sections and how they work together.
Let's take a pause there and look at the table. And Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The previous declaration had a provision where the commissioner of Health and Human Services could help allocate a scarce resource such as a vaccine or other pharmaceuticals or other entities that may be a scarce resource to help combat the COVID outbreak. Does this language currently give the commissioner those powers currently? And I know that we're modeling this at another state. Just want to make sure that state's language would help fit for Alaska needs.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, this current draft does not provide those sort of powers to the Commissioner of Health and Social Services. In the disaster statutes, the governor has the power to be able to access 2623-020G, I believe it's subsection 4, for scarce resources, as well as subsection 2, 1 or 2, for the waiving sort of procurement code. But as proposed in this draft, through the chair, it does not provide the commissioner those powers, but they are provided to the governor under 2623-020.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Shang, is the governor aware of Section 3, and does he agree with it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe the governor is aware of this section, and I would like the department to be able to respond to if the governor would like to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
No further questions. Continue, please.
All right, now on to Section 5. This is on page 5, line 14. This is the financing plan. There is one change that is from the previous version to this version. It's the deletion of the previous subsection 8. This will be a little bit clearer as to why this language was removed at a later section that I'll go over. So if I could hold questions till then, that would be helpful. The next section, Section 6, this is the reporting section. This is on page 6, line 20. This only change from the previous version is the date of May 1st as the first report. Although I believe OMB has continued to provide the financing reports that were outlined in 241, this legislation would only require them to start on May 1st, and that the final report would be January 31st, 2022. Or 60 days after the disaster declaration would be ended early for any reason. Section 7 of the bill is on page 7, line 1. This is the occupational and professional licensing section. The only change is on line 14. That's the conforming change to December 31st, 2021 as the expiration date. The next section is Section 8. This is telemedicine and telehealth. It starts on page 8, line 7. The change that was proposed in this in CS is actually found on page 9, line 7 and 8. This includes a person that provides behavioral health care services in the definition of health care provider. Mr. Chairman, this is to create parity for behavioral health providers utilizing telemedicine or telehealth in Alaska. Next section is Section 9 on page 9, line 9. There are no changes from the previous version. Section 10 is the school operating funds found on page 10, line 3. There are no changes from the previous version. Section 11 is page 10, line 12. This is the similar language or the exact same language from 241 from last year. This provides workers' compensation presumption of compensability. If an individual is employed as a firefighter, emergency medical technician, paramedic, peace officer, or healthcare provider who contracts COVID-19, they are presumed to have contracted an occupational disease arising out of and in the course of employment during the public health disaster emergency declaration and are eligible for workers' compensation benefits. On page 11, line 7, this is section 12. This is a new section. This is a titled program execution, and ultimately it would restrict the governor from increasing an appropriation based on receipts of federal receipts through the revised program legislation, which is the RPL process as we know it, for the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act, the American Rescue Plan Act, or of funds appropriated by the 117th Congress for infrastructure, jobs, as part of the American Jobs Plan, related to COVID-19 or an economic recovery. This section does not apply to appropriations and expenditures ratified under House Bill 313 from 2020 or to appropriations increased in compliance with AS 3707 080H before the effective date of this section. Mr. Chairman, this section is tied to the change ultimately in the financing plan, and these two go together. Right, Section 13, this is a new section. This provides civil and criminal liability for state agencies or an employee or an agent of the state acting in an official capacity for the state for acts performed in good faith. This section does not grant immunity for acts of omission that constitute gross negligence, recklessness, misconduct, or intentional misconduct. The next two sections, Mr. Chairman, kind of go together. These were previously codified law. In this CS, there is a sunset date on these two sections, and so the revisers suggested that these become uncodified law. So that is a change in this version. For sections 14 and 15, this new language was added throughout in both sections, and it focuses on clarifying what is considered gross negligence for a licensee, business, and employee. If a person lives in an area that has mandates that apply and they substantially comply, they acted reasonably and would not be found negligent. However, if a person lives in an area that does not have mandates, then substantial compliance with federal guidelines or another municipality's adopted mandates prove that they took reasonable steps to care for customers and cannot be found negligent. In Section 15, there also was an addition of the of business that has the meaning in AS 1835399. The next section is Section 16. This is unchanged from the previous version. Section 17. This is the repeal dates for some of the sections in 241 from last year. It changes the date on page 13, line 23, from September 30th to December 31st. This is a conforming change. And section 18 on page 13, line 27, this is also a conforming change to other section numbers as they were changed in this draft. Section 19, starting on page 13, line 31, this adds Section 3, which is the emergency power of the governor, and 13, civil liability immunity, to the repeal date of December 31st, 2021. Also, on page 14, line 5, you'll see that there's an addition of Sections 4, which is the emergency powers of the commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services, 14, which is licensee liability for client exposure to COVID-19, and 15, which is the business and employee liability for customers' exposure to COVID-19, to the repeal date of June 30th, 2023. Section 20, this is the retroactivity. There is an inclusion of Section 11, which is the workers' compensation presumption of compensability, to the retroactivity date of November 15th, 2020. Section 21 is the effective date. This still provides an immediate effective date, so there's no change. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to highlight some of the areas in the bill that are no longer included in version E that were in W.A. The previous version, section number 7, is fingerprinting. The testimony provided by the administration indicated that this section is no longer needed since individuals can get their fingerprints rolled in person. Section 8 was a meeting of shareholders. SB 24 has already passed the legislature and was signed by the governor on April 3rd, 2021, so this is an unnecessary section. Section 10, this is the informed consent for COVID-19 vaccines. This is already required by Alaska law under AS 09.55.556. Also, the section of personal objection to the administration of vaccines, which was previous Section 11, this is already provided under the federal level. And Section 15, which was the CARES, CRISA, ARPA funds cannot be used for abortions. This is already a provision in federal law barring the use of federal funds to pay for abortions. And also, the federal funds that will be provided to Alaska to respond to COVID-19 have stringent guidelines, and I do not believe that they allow the funds to use for abortions. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions the best of my ability.
Thank you. Senator Wilson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a litany of questions and would t- take them as your, you would allow.
Well, it depends upon how big the litany is. I might move it around the table if that's okay with you.
That's fine, Mr. Chair. The first question I have is about, we can talk with the latest statement about the abortion funding. Our understanding in our office is that the new ARRA funds that are coming out would allow for funding to allow for supplement program operational items, and that could include abortion funding. That's not necessarily prohibited in the new in the guidance that are coming out within the new state funds. I just wanted to verify that for the record, if that's true or not.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, as we haven't seen the guidance for the ARPA funds or the ARRA funds that are coming into the state of Alaska, I do believe it's under the purview of the legislature when we do receive those funds and those are appropriated, if that is available, if they are able to not comply with the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits the use of abortion, of federal funds for abortion, that it would be under the purview of the legislature to restrict those based off of the guidance, if that were to be allowed from the federal government for funds for operations for abortions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make it, I just would hate to have the Senate wanting to fund those items and take that out of what the other body already passed. If I could continue with my next question, Mr.
Chair.
Next
question.
Would it go into the removal of the RPL process? That is, I think it's in section 12. But it would be the intent then, my understanding is that some federal funds come on a monthly basis to the Departments of Health and Human Services, such as HRSA funds, CDC funds, and other funds that could come from other departments into the state. So every time those funds come in, you're saying that the legislature would have to appropriate those funds.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, this would be for an increase to a federal appropriation level if the funds were coming from those acts that are coming, either were enacted or the funds that are coming in. I do know that Director Steininger is here, as well as I believe Legislative Finance is online, as or Legislative Legal is online to be able to clarify that.
And would you like Mr. Steininger to come to the table?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Steininger. Put yourself on the record, please. And
good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. So my understanding of the language in Section 12 of the committee substitute for the disaster declaration is that the intention is to limit the use of the appropriation in HB 205 granting access to the RPL process through the program execution statute. So as Ms. Schein alluded, that would be for, you know, items increasing on an existing appropriation. So federal appropriations that currently exist within the Department of Health and Social Services would not be further restricted. It would be simply for increases to federal receipts. But this does represent a reduction in the appropriation that's made in HB 205 that generally allowed access to any federal funds through the program execution statute.
Well, I guess, Mr.
Follow-up?
So does the state of Alaska expect it to get an expansion of those federal funds? And if so, do you know which programs or that could happen after the initial funding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there are multiple programs within the Department of Health and Social Services that are receiving additional funding through the American Rescue Plan Act, ARP, that will require additional appropriations, whether those come through an appropriation bill or will be accommodated through the revised program process if the legislature does not make appropriation actions. Additionally, there are, you know, other smaller grants that come into other agencies that may not be known at this time. Over the course of last summer, there were several situations where grants that weren't known initially when the CARES Act was released had to be accommodated through the RPL process. Kind of smaller grants, things like grants through the Community Development Block Grant Program that went out to communities, grants to the National Endowment for the Arts, grants to housing relief programs, things that came in that weren't anticipated, that we've utilized this flexibility to have access to those federal funds coming in to be able to expeditiously deploy those funds into Alaska.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I'm just concerned about that section. I understand the legislature was concerned about having the governor do monthly renewals of a declaration, but under this, I'm afraid that he would do monthly renewals to call us into special session to allocate funds that could come on a monthly level. Just.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, I think this issue, let's me put a little bit of background on it for those at home or watching. We're faced in a situation here where we're going to have potentially billion plus dollars coming to the state between June and January. We don't know what action is going to happen in the Capitol, in D.C., but clearly they're talking about significant financial support for the country. We'll be without language, and I'm not objecting to review of the language, Mr. Chairman, or tweaking it somewhat to make it as on point as possible. But in the event or in the inevitable time frame that I just mentioned, there will be funds available to the state. And we are the appropriating body. And if we don't have enough members within the legislature that will do their elected job and want to come to Juneau and deal with the appropriations, it will then go through the RPL process. The RPL process after is basically a notification that there's federal funds coming. After a 45-day limit, I think, is the time frame on it, the governor could automatically receive the funds and disperse it, thereby excluding the appropriating body, the legislature, from any involvement within the distribution and allocation of those funds out, you know, with any flexibility given by the federal government. The concern is there is a significant number of legislators that do not want to take their obligation seriously enough to show up in Juneau. We saw that last summer and last fall, and we were unable to call ourselves back in to session. The governor would not, under his authority, call us back in, thereby having the authority to go ahead and execute the RPL process. So to alleviate that concern, we need to have restrictions on the RPL process to ensure that if the legislature does not have the wherewithal to call themselves back into session to deal with $1 billion or $2 billion, the governor then cannot receive the money. It would put the state in a position to encourage the governor to step in and call the legislature to session to deal with their obligations, or sworn constitutional obligations as the appropriator. So it is a significant issue. The intent is not to hinder the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, whose chairman sits to my left, and doing her duties to the LBNA process so we can work with, Mr. Chairman, legislative legal and possibly refine this language to minimize the issue that my colleague Senator Wilson mentioned at the table for redundancy of having to run to Juneau for nickels and dimes. We want to run to Juneau for billions, and there are people in this building that will not do it, is my concern. And that can be reflected in the actions over the last 12 calendar months. So it's very, very significant that this issue be addressed in all facets of our appropriation bills to ensure that we have the ability as the appropriating body to have that public discussion and do our duties to allocate federal monies. So that is the issue in front of the committee. It is not to, again, to minimize or take away any authority from legislative budget and audit, but to ensure that there is ample encouragement for the executive branch to call the legislature to special session to deal with billions of dollars that are on the table. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also have concerns about this section, and I understand the chairman's, the operating chairman's concerns on this issue. This, the Alaska State Senate passed provisions to the other body to allow for virtual meetings, which would alleviate a lot of the concerns that I might have if they had, if they passed that provision. The concern also is the chairman had stated that that LBNA without this section would have that authority to go ahead and have the meetings and decide how those dollars get spent. This is typically the case when the legislature is not in session, but this is such a huge amount of funds that it may require the legislature to treat this differently as is presented in this CS. But I would feel much more comfortable with this Section 12 if the other body passed the ability for the legislature to have virtual meetings during the COVID disaster to address the concerns. I understand people have lives after the session ends, after the constitutional 121 days, which is May the 19th, and many people make plans accordingly, but it is also difficult to, as the chairman pointed out, to get the necessary votes to come down to Juneau to address items. So I think that this is a section that needs deliberations by this body and should be treated accordingly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, just as a point of clarification, again, for those watching at home, when we go through the LBNA process with an RPL, we don't have the ability at legislative budget and audit to change it. We just accept it or not. And if we don't accept it or we ignore it, the governor then could just let the clock burn and accept the money. So the concern is that it would take the legislature out of the process where we would have significant input on the decisions, given the flexibility that the federal government gives us on the money to allocate it. And we may agree 100% with the administration, or we may not. We'd never know until that time comes. But it's a little insurance policy. So again, Mr. Chairman, I think the member across the table from me made a good point. The committee should deliberate this and think about it and maybe refine the language or have some input from Ledge Legal, whatever, but clearly defend this table and the legislature's appropriating power. Thank you.
I'd just like to add also that last spring when we did finally conclude to the LBNA process, then there was a legal challenge and we still had to come back to Juneau and affirm what we did through the LBNA process. So that's just another data point out there as well. Thank you. Other questions? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My next concern is with Section 11 for the workers' comp. And I understand this was in 241 when we didn't have the full understanding of how this virus was going to act and work. I'm just worried that we're leaving out folks and this is not all inclusive, and therefore, you know, I'm just not sure if we, this piece of language is actually needed to continue. It leaves out folks like our other frontline workers. I believe all workers are essential. And it also leaves out folks. I don't think the peace officer definition includes correctional officers, which had a huge outbreak in my district and their settings. And I just feel that it's not inclusive enough and it's too restrictive to give a subset of folks just a higher level of just protection, which it should be eligible for all or for none in the MICE case, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Any other comments before you want to hear from anybody else? Any further comments before we set this bill aside? Senator Stedman.
I think we have legislative legal on board here. Would it be appropriate, Mr. Chairman, to ask her to comment on Section 12 because it's been a, you know, an area of discussion here? Just for clarification and help the members and the public.
Megan Wallace. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, give us a second to get the volume turned up here for this hard of hearing in the room. Try that. Try it again, Megan.
Good morning. Megan Wallace, Director of Legal Services, for the record.
Yes, we can hear you. Did you hear Senator Stedman's question or comment?
I did. I don't have too many material questions. I think the only, or comments, the only comment that I would make is that the current language in Section 12 of the bill before you would restrict the governor from utilizing the RPL process with based on the additional federal receipts that are enumerated in that section. But to the extent that there were additional federal receipts that came from the federal government that did not relate to, you know, the infrastructure jobs or American Jobs Plan, or were not directly tied to COVID-19 or economic recovery, and were for more what I will call usual items that the LBNA committee might see during an interim, the language is not intended to restrict all RPLs during the interim, just those that are for federal receipts that are listed in the section before you. And then if I might, I would like to clarify, there was an earlier comment or earlier question from Senator Wilson regarding the powers of the Commissioner of the Health and Social Services, and I wanted to clarify that the bill before you, HB 76, does extend a disaster. So the state would be back under a disaster emergency under Alaska Statute 2623.020. And when the state is under a disaster emergency, the Department of Public Health has certain disaster powers enumerated under Alaska Statute 1815.390, which does allow for the commissioner to restrict, regulate, and ration, you know, things like medicines. And so there would be some powers that the commissioner would retain under this bill that aren't directly related to the powers of the governor under Alaska Statute 2623.020G, which are specifically enumerated in the bill. And so to the extent that there was any desire to limit the powers of the commissioner under Title 18, the committee might want to take a look at those powers and consider whether that's consistent with your intent.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Megan, has there ever been a legal challenge to the RPL process as a whole, questioning whether or not it's constitutional?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes. So when the RPL statutes were initially enacted by the legislature, they were challenged in court and struck down under with a holding that the legislature had delegated too much power to a singular committee, LBNA, to authorize or approve appropriations above and beyond what the full legislature had provided for. And after that litigation is how we ended up with the current statutory language in 3707080H. We had, as the chairman indicated, we did have further challenge after the last major RPL packages by the governor with respect to the CARES Act funding. There was also a legal challenge to the RPL process being utilized to accept and expend those funds. Ultimately, because the legislature came back into session and ratified the actions of the governor and the LBNA committee with respect to the CARES Act RPLs, that litigation ended.
Senator Wilikowski, follow up.
So I just question whether or not the existing RPL process is even constitutional. We don't have a court decision on that, do we?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, no, we do not. It has not come before the court in its current reiteration.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator, excuse me, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering if we have the Commissioner of Health and Social Services online he can provide a few comments on sections 2 through 5, just to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the department with this new SES.
Commissioner Crum.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Crum. I apologize. What sections would Senator Wilson like me to do? They transferred my line over at that moment.
I'll have him repeat his question.
Yes, thank you. I believe sections 2 through 5 cover sort of the needs of the Department of Health and Human Services. Just wanted to make sure that that does cover those sections or any of the retroactivity or repeal sections later in the bill as well.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, for the record, this is Commissioner Crum, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you, sir. So when we look at Section 3, which is the emergency powers, and it talks about the disaster declaration, is we've testified multiple times through various committees that we are in a very different position right now than we were 1 year ago. We have used the tools necessary to set up a robust response infrastructure for widespread testing, supplies, and that now includes vaccine and therapeutic distribution. This infrastructure is in place and will remain in place to support our statewide public health response. And so we actually feel as a department that we do not believe the facts and science related to COVID-19 currently support a disaster declaration, the limited authorities available on that. And so we have highlighted those, which this bill does provide. It is those authorities. And so one aspect of that is when you look at Section 4, the emergency powers of the commissioner, Aaron Schein testified, this is similar language to what we see at the state of Michigan. A lot of other states around the country have different tiers of response, either full disaster declarations or public health emergencies that their health secretary or health commissioner can declare in order to access certain tools, in order to do very targeted prescribed responses in order to deal with health emergencies. And this is a very good step. It does actually warrant a future look at updating our public health laws. And upon reading this section, we do think it would be helpful to amend this to support the allocation and distribution of vaccine and therapeutics and allow for use of emergency procurement procedures to be used to support the state's response. We also think this section should be amended to allow the commissioner to end the public health emergency or for it to end when the federal public health emergency expires. So those are a couple of the items we just wanted to make sure that the committee understood. We appreciate the efforts of continuing to look at this and refining this approach. Thank you, sir.
Senator Wilson, are you satisfied?
Thank you, yeah.
We're going to take a brief at ease. back on the record. Any further questions before I remove my objection of adopting the CS? I remove my objection. Okay. Next up, we're going to have an amendment deadline by 5 p.m. this afternoon. And we have canceled the 1 o'clock meeting, and we're adjourned.
We are adjourned.